This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 171. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
020-88-167-691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. So the team is back together. Welcome to the show, Garris. Welcome to the show, Berners.
All right, Coach. You all right?
Oh, very good. Yes, I've had quite the week. How have things been with you, Berners?
Not too bad, thank you. Back to rainier tropics here in London. It's awful, really. But yeah, I've just been in Australia, so it's nice to be back. It was very good over in Australia. We were doing some Pitch Vision bits and bobs with Cricket Australia. They're at the High Performance Centre in Brisbane, so their winter kind of equates to pretty much a full-blown English summer, allowing all the boys to play outdoors there on grass wickets and lots of central wicket practice. And it was like a war zone of cricket training, know-how and fun. It was really, really good.
Yeah, it's a good spot out there, isn't it? And that, yeah, the reason that they moved from Adelaide to Brisbane was to do exactly as you say, to have all year round practice, wasn't it? And to be able to extend their outdoor training as much as they possibly could. And it's a magnificent facility.
Yeah. Well, when I've been with England in the past, they often, you know, they speak about the outdoor nature and training, practicing how they're going to play. And you see all this rain falling at the moment, I know that the Aussies recently used it as an excuse, but, you know, going in and out of indoor centres at these various grounds with the, you know, the quick bouncy acrylic floors and all of that stuff, and just for their bowlers landing, you know, and then going outside and playing, it must be, you know, not necessarily difficult. It's the same for both teams, of course, but it must just change your routine, and you know, it's harder to settle into a format probably. So I think that the fact that the Aussie guys get out there and they're doing everything that they would do on a normal game day, you know, the run up, the feel of the turf and coming through their delivery stride, and for the batsmen playing balls off of, you know, normal grass pitches is a massive benefit.
Speaking of off seasons and rests, India have had a rare rest from their 12-month schedule of playing cricket, but they're starting playing again now. I suppose it's the start of a new season for them. They've had 7 weeks off any cricket in India, and they're off and running with a series against Sri Lanka. So, Gareth, your mate Duncan Fletcher is looking after things there. What do you think he'll be focusing on?
Well, I think it's a really good opportunity for people outside of a squad to stick their hand up, because there's going to be some transition. I think we've known that for a long time now, that at some stage within the very near future, there's going to be quite a shift in the team, particularly in the batting team as well. And it's a great opportunity for people playing in the Ranji Trophy and other tournaments in India to stick their hand up and say that I'm the one, and maybe not to say I'm the next Dravid or the next Tendulkar, but to say that they're the next themselves that can go on and play in the team. And I know in the way that Fletch has a real penchant for developing new sides, that he's got a very keen eye going out now across all the cricket in India to try and identify, as he did with England in 1999, the likes of a Vaughan and a Triscothic, that they could build a next new team around. And so that will be very much the focus, I think, of Indian cricket over the coming 12 to 18 months, will be the transition, but also the identification of the people that can go on and create a new team around Fletch and MS Dhoni.
Yeah, he was well known for picking those players out of county cricket when their records didn't really reflect high performance. It's well documented that he looked at the character. How do you identify something like that?
Yeah, I think things have changed slightly. He is very good at that. The challenge is being an international coach is that you don't necessarily get close enough to the people in order to assess their character, whereas he got those character assessments from his time at Glamorgan, effectively. So when he was coaching Glamorgan, he was going around the counties and picking up those character traits because he was seeing it at first hand, whereas he probably hasn't got the scope to do that so much within India. So that relies on two things: that you find another way to assess cricketers, or you have which could be statistics, as we've talked about previously on the show, or that you have a network of people around you and around the country that are feeding back against some fairly strict criteria that he'd have laid down. Now, I don't know which one of those he's gone for. It may be a combination of the two. But what I do know is that he's very keen on building a side. So even if he's only with India for, say, 3 or 4 years, that there's a legacy piece that goes off the back end of his tenure.
Imagine if we take this down to a more sort of a less of an international level. Say you're a coach of a rep side, and you're looking to select players, and you're looking for that character above the statistics. Yeah. The normal statistics, like run scored, batting average, bowling average, that kind of thing. What would be your checklist, if you like?
Well, I think you've got to have a look at the tough times, and this is where stats can be slightly misleading at times, is because, in any form of cricket, from any first class, there'll be some easy runs that kick around at certain points. But it's actually trying to shift and sift those runs out of the way, or those wickets out of the way, and actually see what happens at a tough time, because particularly in bowling, you saw it years ago when we were picking on whims in England. I'm talking sort of 20 years ago, where somebody would have a good start of a season on green seamers with Duke's balls with pronounced seams, and then get them play at one test match and be a one test match wonder, or not, as the case may be, where they'll come in and bowl at Lord's on an absolute flat one and get panned around the park, because it's two completely different games on two completely different surfaces. So the thing that Fletch will probably be looking for will be, when the wickets get flat, who are the bowlers that can stand up and still take wickets, can still strike at a good rate, can still keep the runs down when the wickets go really flat, and who are the batters that can perform against some of the best players. And although it's talking about the West Indies, I've just had a conversation today with Jimmy Adams, the ex-West Indies player. And when I asked him how he knew that he was ready to play in international cricket and he'd go in and do a great job, he said, well, it was we played a game against a team that included Patrick Patterson, Ian Bishop and another one of the fast bowlers for the West Indies, all of which were in the sort of world's top 10-15 at the time. So if I could get runs against them, then I knew that I could go into the international arena and thrive. Well, Fletcher would be looking at that. So the best bowlers that are bowling in domestic cricket, if somebody's scoring runs consistently against those guys, and in particular in some of the places where it may be a bit more difficult to score runs, then they're great indicators of character as well as technique. Those are the sort of things that he'll be looking at, because he won't have the advantage, as he had with England, of getting to know county cricket or domestic cricket in India in the same way as he knew county cricket through his experience with Glamorgan.
OK, let's finish off this little introduction with our yes-no round. Each member of the team gets the chance to answer just yes or no to the questions that Berners poses us. We want to say more, but we can't. So, Berners, over to you for this week's yes-no round.
OK, first question. Daryl Steyn is better than James Anderson?
No.
No.
Second question. High backlift yields greater results?
Yes.
No.
Third question. Duckworth-Lewis too confusing?
Yes.
No.
Okay, so it's time to delve into the mailbag and see what we can fish out with your coaching questions. And of course, the best question every week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com/academy. So, Berners, what have you got for us this week?
First question comes in from Joe, and he's a coach. He's been coaching his bowlers about bowling in straight lines, so running up, gathering, following through, always towards the target, which makes sense. It's a core kind of focus for bowlers with coaching. However, he's got a very talented left arm medium pacer who bowls over the wicket, and the straight lines theory has worked well for him to right hand batsman. However, at the moment, he's a little bit conscious of running into that danger zone. So he's probably been warned a couple of times and he's now finding it quite frustrating bowling over the wicket. So he's decided to come around the wicket to enhance the whole proposition of this bowling in straight lines. So the coach has identified that, you know, this doesn't hold so many benefits in terms of his left arm credentials of angling it across the right hander. And just wants to know if we can provide him with some help to get this young lad bowling back over the wicket with confidence.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question because it's given us a great deal of detail. I'm really pleased that he's bowled some overs around the wicket, rather. It's something that we're seeing more and more of. I was watching a game last night where Woody from Hampshire was doing exactly that. And it does open up options. Yet, particularly in the longer format of the game, you'll see many more overs being delivered over the wicket. So it is important for the development of this young player that he's competent and confident to attack the stumps from both sides of the wicket when he's bowling as well. So I agree, let's get him back over the wicket and practicing that too. The way of doing it, or the way that's sort of come into my head first really, is by taking the bowling mark maybe half a step to the right when you're bowling, and then running in on a line like that, because it sounds as if he's getting very close into the stumps in his delivery stride to try and bring off stump into play at the far end against the right hander, and as a result it means he's got more ground to get to between him and getting off of the danger area, which means that there's quite an acute angle getting off the pitch, and of course that acute angle then throws the bowling action a little bit and causes a distraction. And every time I remember Stuart Broad, from a right hander's perspective bowling to left handers in the early part of his test career, was warned repeatedly for getting into the danger area. In fact, his first ball in Test cricket, he got warned for getting into the danger area against the left-hander. And as a result, what he did was take a step slightly wider and then run his line towards off stump from a slightly wider position at the end of his mark. That meant that he was bowling the ball not from mid-crease, but certainly towards mid-crease. He could still bowl down the angle straight onto the line of off stump and obviously run it across towards the slips or bring it back in with the swing of the ball. Yet it allowed him to get off of the pitch easier and took that distraction away from him, which means he could focus on all the things that he really wanted to do. So if you turn that into a left-handed bowler versus right-handed batter version, I would take a step to the left or half a step to the left, run a straight line from that where you'll be delivering the ball more from a midway. It will still bring off stump into play because your angles will be heading towards off stump, yet it will give you less distance to try and get off the danger area, which means that your follow through can be less of acute angle, meaning that everything's going in that straight line again. So a simple step to the left at the end of your run up. Sorry, to your right at the end of your run up.
If it's as simple as a solution as taking one step, then that's probably our best ever most effective piece of advice. Talk about a simple piece of advice.
Well, it certainly is a thing that when I was contemplating the answer, that was the one that I've coached the most that's had success, and I actually couldn't come up with anything more valid or even an alternative option to it in all the time that I've been around some very good bowling coaches. So if there are any out there, then please get in touch. But that's been the one that I've seen some really good bowling coaches deploy, and the Stuart Broad example to left-handed batters was one where that was used, and it made a huge difference to his focus of what he was doing when he was running up to bowl after that.
Do you find that, I mean, it's only one step, so I guess it doesn't make a difference. Do you find that left arms can go a little bit too wide and then they end up blocking themselves off with their front leg and losing a bit of pace?
Yeah, definitely. And that's why, you know, you might need to think about half a step, because actually the danger area isn't that wide. You know, it's not something that is 3 or 4 foot away from the stumps. It's quite tight anyway, so you don't need to go too far. But yeah, that does happen sometimes, and I've seen a lot of. I can remember Mike Whitney. Can you remember Mike Whitney for the Australian? Ended up bowling from quite wide on the crease, and as a result, couldn't swing the ball back in, and the ball just went straight across the left armour, and he lost the reason why he got into the Australian side. So in the first place, so it's something to consider. But you know, you're looking at just shifting your marker out a little bit, half a step, depending on how big you are. But that simple realignment should bear fruit, because it did for Broadie, and it did for a number of left armers that I've been around over the years.
Next question comes in from Vijay, and he's recently been on our website and he thinks it's really good, which is great, Vijay. I'm glad glad the boys are up to scratch. He came to know about the one-legged front foot batting drill, and since then he's been practicing this and he's improved a lot. He wants to know if we've got a similar kind of drill that he could use and adopt for the back foot to increase power off the back foot. So I think he wants the full recipe here, guys. He wants to be off the front foot and the back foot.
This is your drill that you wrote about a while back on Pitch Vision Academy, Gareth, the one-leg front foot drive drill. So if anyone who's listening to this and not quite sure what we mean, check that out. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. In my experience for teaching back foot, I find that the simplest way to do it is to break it down. I mean, it's a very well-known coaching technique, but it's to break it down into easier steps. So you start with your feet in the position where you want to end up, and then you get fed the ball. So all you need to do is think about your balance and the swing of your bat. And then you develop that, so you're halfway between your stance, so you're just moving backwards, and then you finally do it in your stance. So you gradually reverse chain it from where you end up to your stance. And I find that works pretty well, especially with younger cricketers who are still working out body positions and things. If you just do some simple sort of underarm feeds to them, then they can learn how to get the timing and the balance and the alignment right of that back foot shot quite quickly.
Yeah, well, I think that's perfect, and exactly what I was going to come up with was reverse chaining it. The challenge, and why it isn't the same process as the one-legged front foot drill, is that we want to retain our weight going forward still at point of contact, even when we're playing off the back foot. So if we were to just use the same principle that you take your weight back and you take your head back, try and balance over the back of your back leg, then that wouldn't work. So the reverse chaining option that you just given was the one that sprung to mind to me, the challenge with that is to know when to go from the different segments and progress it. You know, when are you ready after making good contact from that finish position to move into being halfway? When are you ready to go from your full stance? So yeah, that's the real challenge for a coach or for a player that's monitoring their performance. But the drill itself, I think, is an excellent one.
We talked a while back on the show as well about when we were talking about pull shots, rocking back and playing the pull shot instead of taking a big step back. Does that still apply to the back foot drive? Can you play it in a less large foot movement way and still be effective with a drive?
Yeah, again, it's all down to the pace of the ball, pretty much. It does vary when you know, you've got a spinner bowling at you at sub 50 miles an hour to somebody who's letting the ball go at you at approaching 90 miles an hour. So obviously, when you go back in any shot, you want to be creating time for yourself, so you've got to weigh up whether you can actually do that or not. And as I'd said back in when we were talking about the pull shot and the way that the pull shot has evolved over the years, and the understanding of how to play it, particularly at the top end, has evolved over the years, is that people against the top pace guys haven't got time to move back and create that extra distance between themselves and the ball. So as a result, they play off a front foot or from a stationary position now. So that still applies, and you'll see that a little bit and some differences in style when you watch some of the South Africans play, because Graham Smith will play some cut shots and back foot drives in this series, yet there won't just be a shift of weight rather than a step back, whereas somebody like Jack Callis will probably have a little bit of a step back with some of the shots that they play. But to me, as long as you can beat the pace of a ball, then it's worth taking that step back, because you will create extra time. If you can't do that, then it's key that you stabilise as quickly as possible, so you can then transfer your momentum through your body up into your arms, into your hand, and through the ball.
And as you said, the classic is that people think they can't get any power into the shot because they're initially moving backwards, whether they're just shifting their weight back or they're taking a step back. The classic problem is you can't get any power into the shot because you think your weight's going backwards. But your weight, certainly the position of your head, as you mentioned, of your head, your head is going forward. Yeah. The weight is going forward. Once you're in that position where your weight is on the back, you've still got to get into the shot. And that's what a lot, especially young players, do. That's why they find it difficult to score off the back foot, and they end up having trying to cut it when it's too close to them, or maybe trying to play a shot which is incorrect in another way, because they're afraid that they're just going to play this wonderful looking drive and it just trickles to mid off. And you don't get any runs for it.
It's a good point, and again, if we're looking at this series that's coming up, it'll be worth watching Ian Bell. Ian Bell, the way he executes that back foot drive, it's one of his trademark shots now. But notice where his weight's going as he's making contact with the ball. It's going back through the ball. It's going back towards the bowler after he'd done his movement pattern, going back to create some time or to get up on his toes. Then at point of impact, everything is going forward. And what I love about Ian Bell's back foot drives when he's playing on telly is that they show it at normal speed, obviously, as you're watching it live, and then they slow it down for the replays, and you get a real appreciation of that weight transfer and the role of his head within that execution of a shot.
Yeah, Ted Dolcart's pretty good at that one as well, isn't he?
Yeah, he's not too bad at it, yeah.
Yeah, he gives it all right. How's your back foot drive, Spurners?
They're okay. Probably don't get back far enough into the crease. Limited foot movement, tend to just stand there and play a lot away from my body. Use my eye a lot more than my feet to get into a good position. But toes facing cover and drive back, no, not really me.
I guess the wickets you play on as well, you don't get a lot of opportunity for the ball to be coming up at that kind of height.
True.
Especially this English summer with everything being so wet and horrible all the time. You're playing on the front foot, even if it's back of a length.
Well, they made me laugh the other day. I was watching a Sky game and they were saying, oh, you know, these batters, they don't have any rhythm or something. It's like, well, hang on a minute. You know, even if it's raining, they've got cricket on their mind 24/7, haven't they? They're a professional cricketer. They're in changing rooms with bats and balls. They're playing indoors. They're, you know, to say that as an excuse, I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah. I can see where you're coming from there. And it is a bit of a cop-out, and it's probably one of those traditional things, you know, that you hear rolled out when it does get a little bit wet. But there are no excuses, because there's been plenty of people that have gone from not playing a couple of games through injury or through wet weather, then dominated with the bat or dominated with the ball without necessarily having to bowl every single day or having to bat every single day. So that tells me a little bit that it's mindset associated rather than the rhythm of batting necessarily.
Yeah, it's definitely the case. I mean, you remember Glenn McGrath a few years ago? He had a great long break from the game, 6 months or something ridiculous like that, and then came back and took 5 wickets on his first international bat.
Well, it's what we talk about, isn't it? All the time on here, it's all in your mind. You go out there. It's exactly the same as what you did 2 weeks ago. It's just that you haven't been stood there for 2 weeks. So how hard can it be?
You know, yeah, like, I suppose the difference, though, with a Glenn McGrath is that he's done it day in, day out. He's practiced to a maximal level. So
yeah.
It's slightly different, you know, a professional, somebody who's dedicated his life to doing that, to somebody that goes out and plays on a weekend and has a couple of weeks off without hitting any balls in between, because yeah. all of those repetitions that that the McGraths of this world have built up over an amount of time, maybe that player hasn't got in the locker and hasn't got in the bank, I suppose. So there is a slight difference of that, and I think it's wrong to maybe tar everybody with the same brush on that one. Yet I do believe that the mentality and the approach that you take out into the middle, whether you're batting or bowling, especially when there's wet weather around, is huge. And I think it was something that's shifted a little bit in professional cricket in England, whereas when I played, everybody would pray for rain. You know, if there was a cloud around, there'd be a bit of praying for rain. I'm not saying it doesn't happen like that in county cricket anymore. Yet it's not as prevalent as it was, and to me, you know, there's been a positive step in the direction of English cricket as a result of having that more positive view, because we do get matches rained off and or we do get cuts in play, yet people now go out and make the most of it when they do get the opportunity to play for an hour or two on a during a game.
Absolutely.
So I guess with someone like McGrath, his muscle memory is so well locked in that it doesn't matter. Almost doesn't matter how he could probably still do it now if he stayed fit. But with a club player, it's less about muscle memory and more about muscle forgetness.
Well, it's an interesting one, whether you agree with muscle memory or not, or whether, you know, you apply it to maybe some of the you know, the scientific way with synapses and myelin and all of those things. It's the same type of principle. It's those repetitions that have been put in, and it's the quality of those repetitions that will allow somebody like a McGrath to be able to perform his skills, maybe not at the same pace as he was when he was in full training, but you know, you look at some of the footballers that get reeled out after 10 years or whatever to play, you drill a ball into them and they kill it dead. They might not be able to run after the ball in the same pace as they did when they're at their pomp, yet their actual technical skills remain. And the senior golf is another fantastic example of that. It's you know, it's been so many repetitions and practicing under such pressure previously that I don't think you ever lose it. And it always amazes me when you see the Arnold Palmers or the Jack Nicklauses having a swing at the US Open, you know, and hitting the first ball of the tournament or whatever, and the thing goes, you know, maybe not as long as it did in days gone by, but straight down the middle and with a similar swing to what they had when they were 25 years old.
Well, we've got miles off topic now, so let's take it back by saying, work on your back foot drive with those technical pointers that we gave you, and good luck. It's time for this week's Soapbox, where one of the members of the team gets their chance to rant for 60 seconds about any topic that they like, as long as it's got something to do with cricket somewhere along the line. So this week it's Gareth. Gareth, over to you.
I'm going to talk this week about people that say, oh, it's a team game when they fail. Obviously, it is a team game, and we have team ethics and team rules and team guidelines that we all adhere to because, you know, we do everything together. However, a lot of the game is played as an individual, whether you be batting or whether you be bowling. I often hear batters in particular when they get out and say, oh, it's okay, it's a team game. But we've also all played when we've had a fantastic batting lineup in the past, you know, you bat all the way down to 10 and nobody actually takes responsibility to score the runs. And I've certainly been involved in sides where I've batted at 8 or 9, which would be a lot lower than I thought, and then all of a sudden I'm in before lunch on the first day of a match because nobody has said that they're actually going to be that person. I'm not a big fan of people saying it's a team game when they fail, I encourage all coaches to go out there and say, right, it's time that everybody took their opportunity and responsibility for their performance and did their role.
That's just about all we've got time for on the show this week. But before we go, we're just going to finish off with a few little extras, including the winner of this week's competition. So we had VJ's backfoot drive discussion and Joe's left arm bowling discussion. Which one did you prefer, Gareth?
Well, VJ's took us on a tangent, but this week I'm going to give the competition to winning to Joe, and the left arm a medium pacer who was struggling to get off the pitch. And hopefully we explained a very simple concept that would work both for the left armers but also for the right handers when they're going and bowling over the wicket to left handed batters as well, who may be struggling to get off of the danger area.
Congratulations, Joe. And if you're listening and you want to have your chance to enter the competition, then you can send in your question to us. Even if you don't win the prize, you still win the coaching advice from Gareth and myself. So, Berners, how do you send in a question?
You can drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com or leave us a message via the telephone, which is 020-88167-691.
I've heard of that technology, telephone. I've heard of it, but I'm more of a user of more old-fashioned things like the Twitter at PV Cricket Coach, and you can also find us on Facebook, which is something on the internet apparently, facebook.com Pitch Vision Academy. So just before we go, got a tail ender. We haven't played cricket for properly for a couple of weeks, but I remember our captain, who is an occasional bowler a couple of weeks back, and he's very famous for bringing himself on when the sixth wicket falls, just so he can polish off the tail and make sure his bowling average looks good. All right, Sam, if you're listening, and we know when the sixth wicket falls, it's time to open the bag, which is his bag of swag, which he always carries over his back in order to take the last few wickets at the end of the innings. So
little man bag, is it?
So yeah, well, it's a great big bag. When he demonstrates it, it's a great big bag. He uses a very large arm movement to demonstrate the size of the bag. So. So yeah, it's not a little shoulder number. It's a great big bag with swag marked on it, which is tied up by a piece of rope, if you believe is mine. So that's this week's tail ender. Open the bag.
Nice one.
Okay, so that's all for this week. Until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers, coach.
Cheers, coach.